Our second speaker today is Nick Hawkins. Nick is the Chief Financial Officer of IAG, which he was appointed to that role in July 2008. Since joining the company in 2001, he's held senior positions in the group, most recently as Chief Executive Officer of IAG's New Zealand business. Before joining IAG, Nick was a partner with the international accounting firm KPMG, where he specialized in working in the financial services with clients in that sector. Nick.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thanks for having us here. What I thought I'd do is not start with that. What I thought I'd do is sort of talk a little bit around at IAG how we address some of the issues that Ian just stepped us through, around sort of firstly some of the frameworks, then the governance, how we think about capital and where this fits into that, and then lastly, actually how we buy and how we manage some of the risks around how we actually buy reinsurance. Sort of big picture, though, to start with, where do we start when we start sort of thinking about risks that we're taking on? Obviously, we start with strategy around what it is we're trying to achieve. We're a general insurance company. We've got to work out which markets we want to operate in, which products we want to sell, and which customers we want to target, right? And that's sort of the obvious place to start, like any other company. We then say, well, then what are those risks that are attached to that strategy? They're the risks that we're all familiar with in insurance companies around what underwriting risk we want to take, what do we want to do with our investment portfolio, what operational risks are inherent in our business model, how are we going to manage our capital. Part of that is then going to be what's going to be our reinsurance strategy. And that sort of is an integrated thinking. What we've done, and we've developed a lot in the last few years, and we were probably one of the companies that Ian mentioned that was probably underweight or a bit undercooked in our risk appetite sort of statement. And over the last couple of years, what we've really done is try to flesh out our overall sort of RMS and then actually, in a lot more detail, sort of create a much more granular understanding of our risk appetite. And Ian always talks about sort of the new director test. Can you pick up one of those documents and actually have a handle on what risk we're taking, which in the context of the strategy of the company, we've gone a bit of trouble to hopefully ensure that actually that is the case. You could pick it up and really get a bit of an understanding of the type of risk profile you should expect as a director or as an executive, sort of risk profile that we are prepared to take on. And of course, every company has a slightly different view about what that profile is. If I then say, well, that's all interesting, but then how do we then govern that view? Because that's all very high level. And we've got loads of these sort of functions within IAG, no doubt in your companies as well. And in fact, I think there are more than this actually in the company. This is just the ones that could fit on the slide. If I'd sort of then bring up, I'll sort of bring the rest of these sort of opening comments around just specifically to sort of cat risk. We got a bit of trouble in our place to sort of understand, one, what it is the risk that we're trying to understand, what is that exposure for those one-off infrequent events that we need to think about, and how do we, one, get a handle on that, and then two, how do we want to manage against that risk? So specifically, say, with how we think about our exposure, I mean, we kind of, one, use a variety of models to sort of model that. So we don't just have one model that we rely on. We actually mostly do it in-house. We do use broker models as well, but we mainly use it in-house. And we also sort of have them tailored a little bit based upon our actual exposure. Now, obviously, a company like ours with big shares in the markets where we operate in Australia and New Zealand, we've got a lot of stuff, a lot of information that we then input in to try to make sure that we just don't have one view of the world. We sort of then come up with a blended view. What we also do in our place, and sizes obviously makes this a bit easier for us to do, we sort of have two things happening at the same time. So we have our reinsurance team that do a fair bit of that modeling, but also Tim and the sort of group actuarial function sort of separately do a piece of work. And so often when we go to the board, because we see model risk as a major issue here for us, we'll often have, say, Tim and the head of reinsurance talking together about the overall exposure and try to keep out the actual buy strategy and make sure we first deal with the more strategic issue of what is the risk profile we've actually got as a company, and do we all agree that actually is it? And of course, it's not an exact number, we know that. And actually, what's the variability around that? And what have we done to ensure that we can have some confidence around that? And even having different groups within our company work on that, I think actually is in itself quite a good control. So we got a bit of trouble on that, and we're very aware of sort of the model risk that we take on when we try and understand our exposures. So we say, well, that's great, now we understand all that, then we've got to figure out how much capital we need to run our company and what risk we're prepared to take. So you're sort of thinking about us, and we're no different than your companies. You know, we've got different buckets of capital, haven't we? That we manage our, we sort of that are inherent in that risk appetite of IAG. We've got equity, so we've got roughly $6.5 billion of net assets in the company. We've got debt, so we go to the debt markets, but it's all, you know, at IAG, we only take debt in the form of regulatory and rating agency capital, so it's all hybrid type instruments. We've got 1.5 or 1.4 of that, and then we have this other big bucket, which you know globally we're a very big buyer. As you all know, and we buy $5 to $6 billion of reinsurance capital on an annual basis. And that's how we then protect against that large exposure that we have from those one-off infrequent events, where actually we've taken a view that actually holding ordinary equity or debt capital against that exposure is not efficient. And of course, we have this other market that's pretty helpful, being the reinsurance market, and we've tapped into that to help us manage that risk profile. The challenge with that, though, is if you think about it, equity we've got forever, and our return is dividends, but we don't have to do any of that. We can just hang on to it as long as we want. Debt's generally long dated, and you know we've got that money for a little while. Reinsurance, as we all know, is often on a one-year basis. So we're running a business model for the medium term where half the capital structure is funded 1 year at a time. So anyone outside of our industry would say that was an unusual way to run a business model, right? But actually, that's how we run our companies. It's kind of a funny thing. We don't have, you know, and so what we do around that, because I think there's two big risks with sort of cat risk and reinsurance. One is you just model the wrong number, and that was, you know, a lot of that, we've shown that you can do that, and we've got the earthquakes in New Zealand as examples of that. So we think we understand what exposure we've got, and it's a bit different than that. And the second one is actually we understood and we went and bought some stuff, but actually either they weren't around for the next year, or actually they couldn't actually pay up when we asked them to anyway. So we've got that counterparty risk. So what we do, and this is just our program, I mean, it's a lot of, that's about $700 or $800 million spend per annum, that program. That's buying $5.5 billion up and a number of sideways and backup bits of protection. But what we do to manage that second point, so once we've sort of got that 5.5 being the right number, we then worry a lot about counterparty, about who it is we're trading with. Are they going to be around for multiple of years? And actually, at that time of need, are they actually going to pay us? And when you've got a massive reliance on that capital to run our company, we got a lot of trouble. So that's probably 40 or 50 people or companies in that program. You could easily pick up the top 20 reinsurers in the world, and I would say every one of those reinsurers would have a slice of our program. Of course, globally, this is a top 5 program in the world. So us and Suncorp do have the advantage, even though we're small, globally relatively small companies in Australia and New Zealand, because of our scale and our buy, that actually we attract the global markets very quickly. And so actually we have, and Suncorp's very similar, we actually have all the majors on our program. We don't have any one partner, despite Berkshire Hathaway being a good friend of IAG. We don't have one partner that actually we rely on. And what we also try and do, which, you know, can be tricky in these markets when they move up and down, is we also try and do some multi-year deals. So we're not entirely running our program, our business, on 1 year capital at a time. And increasingly we're trying to do that as a way of just sort of firming up that supply and not being caught out. And the last thing I'd say is that even though there's a lot of new money around in the reinsurance markets and there's a lot of fresh capital that's come in, actually we're still very much a user of traditional reinsurers. Because, you know, we worry about this new money that's coming in, and yes, we do trade with a little bit, but of course we don't want to have some new best friends in a hedge fund that next year when interest rates go up decide they want to be a bond trader and not a reinsurer anymore, and actually there goes that supply. So we're pretty careful to manage who we actually trade with and look after those long-term relationships. And I think that's an as important aspect of how this works as well as that modelling risk. So on that note, I'll hand you back to Blair, and we're obviously here for questions.